Hello, listeners of Fresnolandia. This is Donnie Bergstrom here. We are in our end of year fundraising campaign at Fresnoland. Yes, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we are trying to raise $15,000 from all of our listeners and readers of Fresnoland by the end of December. And we hope you will consider making a donation to Fresnoland to continue the work that we do to make sure that you all have access to high quality investigative and accountability reporting and to this podcast. If you are interested in becoming a contributor to our campaign before the end of the year, please go to fresnoland.org/donate. Every dollar that you donate to us gets matched at least three times over, thanks to our generous supporters from the Central Valley Community Foundation and the James B. McClatchy Foundation. Thanks so much for all of your support, and I hope to see you around.
Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom.
Today on Fresnolandia, it's just me and Donnie. We have a lot of stuff that's been going on this last week, a lot of things to cover. We're calling this our grab bag episode. We do this periodically when we get overwhelmed by the news cycle and we need to just cover a lot. We're going to start with Prop 50. Now, I've been looking at results from Fresno County, and I've also been listening to a lot of kind of national scope podcasts about what's been happening, and the word blue wave has been used quite a bit. I think in Fresno, I've decided to call it the blue spillover.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit of water coming over the top, but not a wave.
It's really
or
not
even a
wave.
Tide. What was the margin for Prop 50 in Fresno County?
Honestly, it's about 300 votes at the
wow.
moment, as
yeah.
of Friday morning.
That's incredible. That really is, you better get out and vote.
Truly. And mail-in ballots, which are still being counted right now, and people who generally tend to vote last minute tend to lean Democratic. So it's likely that 300 number will grow.
Do we have a sense of how much is left to be counted?
I haven't checked in with the latest numbers from the county clerk, so I can't answer that question.
Well, and it's already overwhelmingly passed in the state.
So, it has, yeah. So it's 63% kind of, yeah, statewide. Fresno County, this may not be a surprise to our listeners, but Fresno County has historically voted Democratic in every single presidential election in the last 20 years. And this last year in 2024, that was the first time since 2004 that Fresno County had voted for Republican. So it's, I know people like to think of the Central Valley and certainly Fresno as a red place, just unequivocally false, deeply purple. So to have Prop 50 win in Fresno County isn't very surprising, especially considered the Trump backlash that we're seeing.
Yeah, what do you think of the statement that this is a referendum on Trump? Does that bear out in analysis?
We had reporters in the field in Fresno. We talked to probably, I don't know, 15 to 20 people. The people who were yes on 50, it's protecting democracy. It's I don't like Trump. It's I hate the immigration policies that I'm seeing. It's not really about redistricting. It's not really about that. And that seemed to be reflected in the analysis that I saw from national folks across the board, that this is just a reaction. But this is really typical. This was not a midterm election. This was just a special election. We will see in the midterms where the sentiment really lies on Trump's second term in the presidency. But this is a normal shift, the reaction to whoever's in power.
Okay. What is going to be the outcome for Fresno County more broadly? How is it going to change our political landscape?
Yeah, so we're going to go from being split from four congressional districts into six. So that's going to be a major shift, is that we'll just have more representatives in Congress. Two of the seats that are in Fresno County will go from being toss-up seats to leaning more Democratic. One of them is already held by a Democrat. That's Adam Gray, who represents Western Fresno County, and that one goes north. And so
that just solidifies his position?
I think so. I haven't seen any analysis since Prop 50 passed to suggest that's going to be different. But the other seat that this affects is Congressional District 22, which is the seat currently held by David Valadao. And that now will go deeper into Fresno County and the city of Fresno. And I think that Valadao is probably very concerned about whether he's going to win. Mm-hmm. And you have two Democrats that are vying for that seat. You have Dr. Jasmeet Bains, who's from Bakersfield. She's in the state assembly right now. And then you have Randy Villegas, who's a Visalia Unified trustee. Jasmeet is more of the, or Dr. Bains is more of the establishment candidate, whereas Randy Villegas is from the Working Families Party. He's more of the, I'm not going to take corporate money. I'm not going to take any corporate PAC money. So that's the race that's shaping up at the moment.
And what has been the Republican messaging about this outcome?
The Republican Party, the California GOP, has sued the state of California over the result. And our assembly member from Clovis, David Tangipa, was part of the press conference announcing that lawsuit. And they're going to try to fight it in the courts and see where that goes.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, Measure C.
Woo!
We've had some
ongoing
drama with Measure C. So what's happened in this last week?
Guys, if you know me, you know how much I love to talk about Measure C, which is one of the nerdiest topics.
So every Friday night, she sits on her couch rereading Measure C.
I know. I this morning, my husband and I have a standing coffee date in the mornings, and I'm like, you've got to hear all of the updates on Measure C. It's so exciting. And he's, oh, okay, let me get more coffee.
Okay, what did that steering committee do?
Okay, so just a quick backup. Measure C is our transportation sales tax. We've had it in Fresno County since 1986. It's how we raise money to build all the freeways that we have in Fresno. And there's been this battle brewing for 4 years now, essentially, over the next version of Measure C, because the current tax is about to expire next year. And there's like a pro rural coalition, there's the City of Fresno coalition, which is their priorities are mostly about fixing potholes in Fresno. There's the county, who they care more about fixing county roads. There's the pro transit people, there's the pro bike lanes. So you have all these like factions, and these factions have historically been at odds with each other. And that's why in 2022 they tried to put Measure C on the ballot, it failed, etc. Anyways, Thursday afternoon, there was a Measure C steering committee meeting. They passed by a 93% vote a plan for the next version of Measure C that includes almost 70% of the money to be set aside to fix local roads. That also includes money for bike lanes, trails, sidewalks, etc. And then 25% will go towards transit, which is a jump from what we saw in the last ballot.
What do you attribute this breakthrough? How did the stalemate end? Is it just the impending deadline of having
pressure help?
Pressure on the deadline helps?
I think pressure on the deadline helps. Like, they really have to move quickly, because if this coalition didn't find some sort of consensus, there's a likely scenario that we would have three ballot measures on the ballot in which everyone fails. So it's like that, what movie is it where everyone has like guns facing at each other?
Oh, the Spider-Man meme is what comes to mind.
Spider-Man meme is the one with the guns.
The one with the guns, okay.
Anyways, I clearly don't understand my pop
culture
memes.
There's a few movies with guns, yes. But yeah.
Okay. So anyways, everyone had their guns pointed at each other for a long time, and I would not say that the guns are down yet, but the guns have, maybe they've not loaded the guns yet. That's the part of the plot we're in right now.
Is this a good thing for the city of Fresno, the outcome that has come out of this breakthrough?
I think the city of Fresno does really well in this, because first of all, cities in Fresno County with this new plan are going to get a much larger amount of money than they've ever gotten before from Measure C to directly fix local roads. And that's been, if you poll people, and they just had a poll that came out that we learned about this week, when you poll people, everyone wants the potholes to get fixed. That's not controversial.
Yeah, it's what we all interact with every day.
Exactly.
People interact with bike lanes, but it's a minority.
Right. Yeah. People want their potholes fixed. And now this plan has more money than ever before to actually fix that problem, because we're spending way less money in this new version on building out freeways, building new interchanges. Those are very expensive projects. Like, it costs Veterans Boulevard, the new interchange over the 99. That's like a $200 to $300 million project.
Wild.
Paving over Shields is like $1 million or $2 million. These are scale.
Right.
Very different. So it's a massive sea change for Fresno to go from like building roads and freeways to fixing what we have, and also potentially having more money to expand transit. So
that's fantastic. Good news. If you listened last week, you probably listened to Annalisa Perea and us discussing urban housing policy. And then there was this week a ministerial housing policy which passed its first hurdle. What happened?
Yeah. So the council has tried for, gosh, most of 2025 to adopt some sort of policy that would, it's called ministerial for people who are in housing wonks.
Yeah. That term gets tossed around a lot. And I think it's one of those jargon terms that a lot of people just, their eyes glaze over. What does it mean?
For sure. It's sometimes people also call it by right. But basically what it means is that it strips the discretion from the city to just arbitrarily place conditions on a housing development in certain parts of the city. And so what they did is they approved ministerial approval in places that are zoned for offices. So like along Herndon, there's tons of office zone districts. And before the policy, you'd have to like rezone to make sure that you could build housing. And now it's just, if you want to build apartments next to the new Kaiser building on Herndon and First, like you can do that.
So this is what Perret was talking about in terms of cutting red tape.
Exactly.
Trying to reduce bottlenecks in approving housing.
It makes it much more difficult if you are a NIMBY to oppose a project and successfully take it out.
Yeah. Given the state of our housing and the shortage, I think this is about as good news as you can have.
Yeah.
We did have a chaotic procedural week at the Fresno City Council. Some drama and some action, some fun. What happened?
Okay. Gosh, how do I even start on this one? And I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but let me just say a few things. There are many policies that keep rearing their heads and people get really frustrated about. You may have heard that some members of the city council are trying to change the laws on street vendors operating in the Tower District. You may have heard about a really controversial rezone that would happen in Southwest Fresno that would allow more industrial uses in a residential neighborhood. Those policies were put on the agenda and they were yanked off the agenda. And without a lot of discussion, and that's just a part of the chaos that we see frequently at city council, is things will get placed, everyone will organize, you'll have a bunch of people ready to have a conversation, and then it's, oh, just kidding, we're going to move this for another 2 weeks. So there was a lot of that happening. Also, the way that the debate around ministerial happened was just a very fascinating exercise in the chaos of governing and lots of rewriting policy on the dais.
So do you think this chaos means that the city council is struggling to be productive, or do you think this is just part of the process of local city government managing a lot of different stakeholders and initiatives?
I think part of it is to be expected. It is very difficult to manage a lot of complex moving parts at once. And I think that the city council, something I've learned, and some people remember that I did work at City Hall, but I worked on the administrative side. And all of the policymaking apparatus is under the mayor and city manager side, not under the purview of the city council. So they have very little staff to actually research and build policy. And so if they're putting forward stuff that they want to do to change the way that the city governs, they have a fraction of the capacity needed to do the research and understand what they're doing. I think it's more of a reflection of that imbalance, and they are policymakers and they want to change the way the city operates, but they don't have the infrastructure to do it maybe as well as they would like.
Yeah, and a lot of them are political climbers and want to use their record as ammo when they run for
higher
offices.
It is fundraising season, and I think maybe 4 or 5 of them are running for higher office right now. And so the way that they put things on the agenda or don't put things on the agenda is always part of the calculus of how they run for office.
Signaling is what we call it.
Yes, loss of signaling.
Okay. So we are still in the midst of a government shutdown. I've been watching the news today as flights get canceled across the country, but we also have local effects. There's a lot of people that rely on SNAP, which is another word for food stamps in Fresno County. What's going on with SNAP right now in Fresno? Or it's CalFresh.
CalFresh.
In California.
Yeah, or EBT. So there's about 246,000 people that rely on SNAP or CalFresh in Fresno County. So it's quite a bit, over 20% of our population. And some people don't realize this, but SNAP is not just for people who aren't working or unemployed, but a lot of people who work and have full-time jobs use SNAP. Anyways, so because of the shutdown, Trump had said that people were not going to get their SNAP benefits in November. There was a lawsuit. There's been some back and forth of the lawsuit, but needless to say, we are now, what is today, November 7th, and people hadn't gotten their SNAP cards loaded as of November 6th. And the food bank, Central California Food Bank, was already reporting a lot of challenges that people were having accessing food. It was just this huge issue. The city of Fresno even said, hey, have $250,000 food bank to help alleviate some of this crisis. Trump administration got sued because they have a reserve that they can tap to make sure that SNAP benefits don't lapse through the shutdown. And they didn't want to use that reserve. And then the courts basically said, you have to use the reserve. So as of Friday, we were alerted by a Fresno County spokesperson that people who use SNAP in Fresno County now can have benefits loaded onto their cards. So that is literally a Friday. Now, whether it's the full benefit, partial benefit, that's still being figured out. But it's been a huge disruption to nearly a quarter of our population in the county.
And when you have uncertainty, people do things to prepare for that uncertainty. They might sell some things so they can make sure they have enough money for food over the course of a month. And so that uncertainty costs people. Uncertainty is not free, and that's frustrating. In this world of uncertainty, we have some resources to mitigate that. We've got our local food bank. We've got some different operations. What are we hearing word from the city of how they're thinking about this and supporting?
The city council at their meeting on Thursday allocated $250,000 towards the food bank. So that was the first really large donation that we've seen from a local government. In San Francisco, the mayor of San Francisco raised $18 million as soon as the SNAP delay was announced, so that no one in San Francisco would have their SNAP benefits dissipate for the month of November. In Alameda County, they've also raised several million dollars. And so a lot of local governments are trying to figure out how to step in to the fray and do something. And so this is what the city did. We haven't heard a peep from the county yet in terms of how they're fundraising or thinking about ways to fill the gap. But now it appears people are starting to get their benefits back. So that may not happen.
Given my understanding of Fresno County, it'll probably be at the last minute. Now, I mentioned flight cancellations.
Yeah.
Are we seeing any of that locally at our local regional airport?
The word used by the spokesperson at the airport is disruptions. So you may have seen that the Federal Aviation Administration has asked several airports to cancel flights to diminish the air traffic capacity because we don't have as many air traffic controllers because of the shutdown and people aren't getting paid. And so even though FAT wasn't one of those airports where the FAA has asked for flights to be canceled, so many of our connections, Dallas, Denver.
What does it matter if you can fly out of here if you're stuck in the next place?
Exactly. So people are seeing disruptions here in Fresno because of that. The security lines just are a little bit longer. So if you're planning to travel right now, just stay connected to the airport.
Staycation. It's staycation month.
Just really glad I'm
And this
not flying.
Is like the best weather year round in Fresno. So
absolutely.
So just enjoy being here.
Yeah.
If you're going to lose a flight out of this, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
obviously.
I know.
I don't want to downplay people's suffering in this situation, but it's a predicament.
Okay. So another casualty of the shutdown has been Fresno Economic Opportunities Commission is...
Can you say briefly what they do?
Sure. Yeah. So they like to call themselves the largest poverty fighting nonprofit in Fresno County. They do all sorts of random things and they get a lot of federal funding to do it. They do food distributions. They run the Head Start program, preschool.
So they're like similar to United Way in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's like an administrator of a lot of federal grants meant to
implement stuff,
create a social safety net. They administer the program that people use to get rebates off of their electricity bills if they're too high. They help people that are lower income access solar. So like
they
fill gaps in the safety net is basically their goal. Anyways, we learned this week that they are planning to potentially furlough over 600 of their employees come January 1st if the shutdown continues. So that's the biggest impact we've seen so far, obviously besides SNAP. And the biggest furloughs, so that would be a pretty significant.
So I'm assuming
impact.
Furloughing employees means furloughing programs by effect.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's close with something gloomy. PG&E is considering a rate hike, which is just business as usual.
Yeah.
What's going on? Are we having some public hearings in advance of this?
The public hearings are on Friday, this last Friday. So if you're listening to this, you already missed the public hearings, but hopefully you'll read our coverage about it. But yes, so PG&E has been increasing rates pretty significantly for all sorts of reasons, for wildfire content.
Yeah, I'm going to dig into this to promote my other podcast, the History of California podcast.
Yes.
I had a great conversation with Catherine Blunt, who's an investigative reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She wrote a fantastic book called California Burning, which digs into the complicated and litigious history of PG&E and explains exactly where these rate hikes are coming from, which is wildfires, mismanagement, and a bunch of stuff. And so it's a topic worth digging into because we're all affected by it.
That book has been on my list for a long time, so now I know that you have a podcast with it. I'm going to listen to it.
I'll give you the book too.
Perfect. So anyways, there's another rate hike coming. The California Public Utilities Commission is doing their public hearings right now, and that will come back before them in the next few weeks or so. So if you are a person that hates watching your PG&E bill go up and up, which I think is basically all of us, there's a vehicle for you to express your hatred.
We conclude these podcasts each week with what we're loving this week. I'm going to start this week. There's just been a bunch of good music I've been listening to lately, so I'm just going to give you guys just a kind of a series of recommendations.
It's Hillary Duff, isn't it?
No, it's not.
Because she has new music today.
It is not Hillary Duff. Oh, my God. So I listen to a lot of different kinds of music. I would say that I am omnivorous. In some people have one lane that they just live in, and I've just never been that way. And so I love hip-hop, for example, and this last week we had a great album put out by Hit-Boy and The Alchemist called Goldfish, and it's been probably one of my favorite hip-hop albums of the year. There's a lot of slow melodic hip-hop in there. There's some bangers as well, so you get a little bit of both, and just The Alchemist has just been producing so much recently. On the other side, I also love classical music. Listeners will know I'm on the board of the Philharmonic, and classical music is a big part of my life. Tiffany Poon, who is an incredible pianist, put out a new album this week called Nature, which has some fantastic recordings of just absolutely technically beautiful performances and some incredible music to listen to. And it's not overwhelming, it's gentle, soothing a lot. And then the last one is called Fukushima. It's a new jazz album. I won't try to say the name, but just look up Fukushima, and it's jazz, where the lead is toggling between soprano and alto sax, but there's also violin, which I don't typically like in jazz, but this album does it probably better than I've heard in a long time. And so those are my three recommendations for this week. I think I kind of listen based on time. So like in the morning, I like classical music. Midday, I get into the hip hop. And in the evening, I kind of listen to jazz. So I guess.
Are you pretty consistent with that rhythm?
For the most part, I maybe could listen. I used to listen quite a bit more jazz than I do now. I was in jazz band in high school. I played in a jazz quartet. I was into jazz for a long time. But I don't listen as much now. Jazz has changed quite a bit in good ways. But I'm still always feel like I'm catching up and trying to stay up to date on what's going on in the world of jazz. So sometimes I feel overwhelmed by like my lack of knowledge about what's going on. And so I've been trying to get back into it. I found a great Substack that's guiding me back into the world of jazz. So
nice.
Yeah. What are you loving this week?
I feel like my music listening is more seasonal than temporal.
Can I ask you, what has been the kind of, now that the new Taylor Swift album's been out for more than a month now, what's the kind of like consensus position on its status within her discography? Like, where is it at? I know you have your own opinions, but what are you hearing in terms of rumblings and how people are perceiving the album?
I feel like most people in the fandom that I know, it is a top album for them.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I've heard quite a bit of negative things. I've also heard a lot of big time booster, oh, this is just as good. It's the same. It's just continuing what she's already been doing.
Yeah. I don't spend as much time online as I used to, and so I'm probably missing a lot, but
within your community,
Swifty community, everyone is deeply embracing the album.
Okay.
I'm like the one like
naysayer.
I'm not a naysayer, but I'm like, I have other favorites.
So you would put this in a mid-tier?
Okay. This would be mid-tier for me, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And what are you loving this week?
Okay, I think you know this, but every November we go to Yosemite, and it is a lovely time of year for Yosemite, and so I'm going tomorrow, and I'm very excited about it because I just love fall colors. I lived in New York for a couple of years of my life. And once you live in a place that has like incredible fall colors, I feel like I just crave it this time of year. And if I don't get it, I feel like I've missed a part of the year. So I'm very happy that Yosemite is my place. I get to recreate that.
Is there a fall hike you'd recommend? Or for you, is it more just about driving down in the valley and seeing the trees?
Honestly, I get so much pleasure from even just the drive. Because you just put on like your favorite fall album. There's some music to me that's coded deeply fall. And you just put that on. You have the windows down. It's just the vibes.
Yeah. You could just go to Glacier Point. You can just drive up.
Truly. And just to be clear, I don't go to hike in these November Yosemite trips. I go get my kids out. We'll like maybe hike to Bridal Veil Falls or something, the lower Bridal Veil hike, the one that's a half a mile.
Yeah.
And then go to the Ioane and get a cocktail.
And sit on that back patio.
Yep. Absolutely. I feel
back
like...
back patio is where it's at.
The back patio for the Ioane, like I don't feel like people, locals... appreciate this enough that you don't have to stay like you don't have to spend $600 to stay at the Ioane. You can still deeply enjoy
just roll through the lobby, head straight to the bar, and then go to that back patio.
Exactly.
And they have mocktails on the menu too, so if you don't drink, just sit out there and enjoy it.
Oh, I don't think I knew that.
You
didn't
know
that.
Good to know. Yeah, I think in the fall for me, I do similar things. I'm going at some point this month. I was planning to go next weekend, the weekend of the 15th, 16th, something like that. But it's supposed to rain the whole time. So I think you're getting in right at the right time. But yeah, I love the high elevation stuff in the fall. Taft Point, Glacier Point, those kinds of things. But really just being down in the valley, seeing the fall colors and seeing the 10,000 photographers that are shooting family photos. It's really, it's an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, it really is. I know it's a good drive, but I'm a person that is known to just be like, hey, I'm going to drive. When I lived in New York, we lived like, 3 hours from the Canadian border. And so we'd be like, hey, let's drive to Toronto. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's not bad. It's a little windy, but there are places you can stop, stuff that you can look at.
Yeah.
This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.